Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 217. My name's Turner Sparks.
And I am Kaplan.
You can find me at turnersparks.com. You can find this show, lostinamericapod.com. You can find Kaplan at Cap in America on Instagram. This show is on Instagram, lostinamericapod. We also have on the show today, we have Indian comedian Daniel Fernandez. Kaplan, we're talking about the farmers' strike slash protest slash, if we want to call it a riot that happened yesterday, I don't know. We'll get into that in a minute. Before we get to that, Patreon, do you want to take this over? Is this your section, Kaplan, to explain?
Well, I'm going to tell you, we have a Patreon show we do three times a week called Live from the Bunker. And if you're not a subscriber, this is the week to subscribe because our wives are very upset with us. This is just a little teaser. They are upset that we're doing too many podcasts. So we're going to talk about this on tomorrow's episode, but we might be getting divorced over doing this show. Both of us, they're both on the ropes. Our wives are angry. Too many podcasts. So we need you guys to support the pod. And how do you do that? Turner?
Patreon? Kaplan doesn't remember. You go to patreon.com. You go to patreon.com/lostinamerica. You get three extra episodes a week of just Kaplan and I, 30-minute full comedy episodes, 30 minutes. Doing for $5 a month, you get that. Plus for $10
a month. That's a bargain.
For $10 a month, you get a Lost in America number one in Armenia t-shirt. We went to number one in Armenia. Kaplan's wearing the shirt right here right now for everyone watching on YouTube. Also, we have these mugs. We got a ton of merch. You got to print merch. And we have a great, so do that. We have a great review I want to read right now. As everyone knows, we started the World's Smartest Podcast Network with Andrea Jones-Roy.
As everyone knows.
And Andrew Heaton. Check out their podcast. Everyone knows that. We just got a new review on iTunes of the show. Let me find it. It says,
Okay.
First of all, it's from Yo Mama.
Yo Mama. That's, I like
so
it.
Shout out to Yo Mama. Thanks shout for listening. Five stars they gave us. And they but then it seems like a bit of hate mail. It says, false institutional advertising is the headline of the review. And it says, contrary to the name of their network, Mordecai and Sparks are hilarious idiots.
I love that review.
I take it as a compliment.
Yeah, I take it because I would rather be a hilarious idiot than a smart bore, right? You know,
and
as long as you say I'm funny, you can say anything.
Say whatever you want about me. Just make it five stars.
Oh, right. I'd rather be. Yeah. You could say I'm smart and gave me four stars. No good. We want all. If you have never not given us an iTunes review, I don't know what you're waiting for. Get over there. Give us a review. Five stars only. And please, you can use my Hebrew name, Mordecai. You can call me Michael. You can call me Kaplan. Whatever you, as long as you give me five stars, I love it. So thank you very much, Yo Mama.
On the podcast. Okay, let's get to today's episode, Kaplan. Yes. On the podcast, Daniel Fernandez is coming in just a second. We're talking about, by the way, he has the You Started It podcast. You could check it out. And he that's on YouTube and on a podcast, whatever podcast players you have. He has his comedy special Shadows, which I want to talk to him a little bit about later. And that's on YouTube as well, or will be on YouTube. I think it's on YouTube. Let's say it's on YouTube by the time you listen.
Go with
to
that.
This, it'll be on YouTube, which also we'll get into the details of why later. Now, the farmers strike, Kaplan. What do you know about this? I know it's local to your neighborhood.
Right. So listeners to our Patreon show would know already that about a month ago, I think, there was a day in my neighborhood where the we call them the Yenta Pack, the people in my neighborhood who complain about everything. They're always on Facebook complaining about things. And one day they said, attention, everybody, there's fencing, hundreds of people fencing in the local park. I've called the police. I'm on it, but I just wanted to warn people.
Now, and this everyone, is the sport of fencing. They're
the
not putting up
fencing. They said there were people with swords, and it was
to and they called the police.
Police are called. Keep your children away. They could get stabbed by accident. And then it turned out somebody came in who's a little more cultured and said, those are actually people protesting the Indian farming. It's an Indian farming protest. They're not fencers. Those are ceremonial
swords.
They're
not playing the sport of fencing. Yes. They're protesting something going on the other side of the world. Yes.
Yeah. So that was my extent of my knowledge until recently. I knew there was something going on because if it's here, if it's in Long Island City, we're a very apathetic neighborhood. It's obviously going on other places, including India. And then we saw this week that the protest turned a little more violent, correct?
Well, I'll take over from here. So what we know is this story has been happening for a few months. I know that because we thought about doing the story a couple months ago. Indian farmers are a big part of the country, and the Modi's government has decided to take away their subsidy, essentially, from what I can tell. They've been getting subsidized, I don't know if it's wages or in some way, the government's kind of propping up the farming community so people can farm so that they can sell it so people can eat, I believe. And Modi has now taken that away. He said, there's going to be no more subsidies. We're not helping you out anymore. It's going to be free market. Every man for themselves. If you want to farm, figure out how you can farm. The farmers are pissed. They've gone into the cities and they're now protesting / rioting. And that's what I know. Daniel Fernandez, welcome to the show. Thanks for hanging out. What did we get right?
Thanks
on that?
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, what did we get wrong?
Some part of it that the farmers are pissed off for sure. Yes, that has happened for sure. As far as the subsidies are concerned, I believe, again, I just want to clarify to all the listeners out there. My opinions and the knowledge that I have about this is based on what I've read and watched on the news. This is a very complex issue. So I am not an expert, but I have.
This is a comedy show.
You're an expert to us, idiots.
Oh, trust me.
We're hilarious idiots. You're an expert.
When people in India watch this, they're going to be fact checking a lot of stuff, which they don't do with the news, by the way. It's only when a comedian opens his mouth, you have to get everything right.
That's why we sell ourselves as more. Morons, yeah. And then no one,
Yeah, exactly. So here's what it is, all right? So the agricultural industry in India for the longest time has been regulated by the government. So they have something called the MSP, which is a minimum selling price, which assures farmers a minimum amount of income for their produce. They've also been receiving subsidized electricity, which, you know, in turn helps them with their farming. They do not pay taxes. Anybody in the agricultural industry does not have to pay income tax. So I think that still stays. So what they have done now, what these new farm laws say is basically that they're going to deregulate the industry. They're going to make it a free market where, as you said, where farmers can now trade with whoever they want, however they want, which the farmers are not happy with for many reasons. One of them being that they were not consulted before these laws were introduced. Two, the laws were just, passed in a very hurried manner. They literally plowed through parliament. Those bills are plowed through parliament with no discussion whatsoever. So it's kind of coming across like it's forced upon them. And while the government keeps saying that this is good for you as a farmer, it's a free market now, you can sell to whoever you want, you can decide the price, et cetera, the farmers believe that in the long run, what will happen is once the corporations get into this space over a period of time, as economics dictate, the corporations will then get to decide what price they want to buy at, which will then mean that the farmers lose the advantage they had with the MSP, and they fear that they might lose income over the years. So there's been an agitation going on for a couple of months now. They've been protesting peacefully up until yesterday. And then the government did speak to them. The Supreme Court intervened as well. The Supreme Court said that the laws will be stayed and they will set up a 4-member committee to discuss these laws with the farmers and come arrive at a consensus. Except these 4 people in the committee have already publicly voiced their opinions about these laws and they are with the government on this. So it's kind of like me going, hey, man, I know you have a problem with me, Turner, but let's sort this out. We'll set up a committee of 4 of my best friends. And they'll make sure, you know, they're very neutral. They'll make sure that, you know, we arrive at something where both of us win. So the farmers didn't like that. And then yesterday we celebrated Republic Day, which is a big deal in India. So the farmers wanted to use that as a platform to, you know, voice their protest. And they were given permission by the police to arrive into the city, Delhi, the capital city. But they were told to stick to a certain route. Where and what happened was some of them deviated from the route and then there was a little bit of rioting and then some group of people broke through barricades and got into the Red Fort and they planted a religious flag on the Red Fort. Now, here's where it gets a little complicated. The person leading this supposed riot is known to be a friend of the government.
So
you see what's happening here. So the farmers are going, hang on, that's not our guy.
Right. He's a false flagger.
Yeah. It's a false flag. Yeah.
False flag, yeah.
Yeah. So he's gone in there and he set up a flag. So what the Indian media, the news media, unfortunately, the majority of them are also pro-government. So they tried to spin that entire situation as a riot caused by the farmers. And they actually, believe it or not, try to compare it to what happened at Capitol Hill.
That's so, in America. I mean, so just on Kaplan and I reading these articles this morning, the first thing we thought. It. We go, oh.
Nobody stole a lectern or anything out of there.
No, nobody stole a lectern. No laptops were stolen. Okay. Nobody.
No Q shaman. He wasn't
cow horns. Nothing. Shaman. No shaman.
Can we send the Q there?
Yeah. What the media said was that the farmers actually removed the Indian flag that's hoisted up right on top of the Red Fort, and you know, planted the religious flag, which is not true at all. I mean, of course, a lot of fact finding missions were conducted after which people showed that the Indian flag stayed. They did not touch the Indian flag. They planted the flag or hoisted the flag in a space that was vacant. And ironically, there are also clips going around of the Delhi police ripping the Indian flag off some of the farmers' tractors and throwing them onto the ground. So it's a very messed up situation, as you can imagine.
And the religious flag they were planting, was that a Sikh flag or...
A Sikh flag, okay. Yes. Apparently, it's a sacred Sikh flag.
So are the farmers, Kaplan came across this before, but are the farmers mostly, it's 60% of the country we read is farmers. Is that correct? Roughly. Does that seem correct? I mean, that's what the New York Times...
It's close. Yeah. A large percentage of India's population is in the agriculture industry. A very large percentage of that population.
And we should also say, before we keep going, we're talking about, it's yesterday for us, but when this comes out, it will be like 5 days earlier. We're recording recording on Wednesday. Really? What's today? January 27th, I believe. So this will be out in a few days. Anyway, that's what happened. So 60% of the country, if 60% of the country is farmers, does Modi and his government need to, it seems like they would want to keep those people happy, right? Because those are voters as well.
It's a very tricky situation. The way the elections are set up in India is a little different from the US. You know, you in the US, you have 2 candidates. You have the, you know, Republicans and Democrats, whereas here you vote for a party, a political party. So you have to win by a certain number of majority to, you know, get into office. Now, I read recently that the BJP in the last elections captured about 38% of the vote share. Keep in mind, a lot of people in India do not vote. So out of the people that did
vote, Modi's party.
Modi's party won about 38% of the vote share, which was enough for him to, you know, maintain his position in the office. And so what's happening now is he, over the years, and I this is what I read, and this is also true, is that he keeps pandering to the 38%. Instead of trying to win over the remaining vote bank, he keeps pandering to 38%. So what he has figured is, as long as he keeps that 38% happy, it is enough for him to stay in power. So now, how many of these farmers form that 38% is something I'm not aware of.
Yeah.
Also, Modi is very pro corporates, pro corporations. So that's where a lot of the funding for the party allegedly comes. So he's more interested in keeping them happy rather than the farmers. I mean, to be honest, I mean, in India, as is the case with most developing countries and in the world, if you're poor, nobody really gives a shit about you, no matter what you do, beyond a point. You're just another farmer. I mean, in Indian farmers, the suicide rate amongst Indian farmers is some of the highest in the world. But you still do not see much being done to alleviate that. You know, it's kind of sad because they are killing themselves over loans that are not that much for someone who's doing even reasonably well. But the kind of hardships that they face. While on the other hand, you've got these corporate cronies who have swindled the economy to the tunes of millions of dollars, and they're scot-free, or they've fled the country. And
they sleep well at night, right?
That's
why Turney loves crony capitalism. He's big.
Crony capitalism on the record. For the win. Yeah. Yeah.
Likes to sleep well.
Kaplan's selling me out of it.
Well, I know you've got on the record with that stance. So,
so what? This might be a deeper question, but we have time. Why doesn't everyone? Why don't more people vote? And is there some politician? I was reading, is it the mayor of Delhi or something? I might be off, but is there some politician that's trying to, this seems like a base of support you could get if you were an opponent of Modi's. You could say, hey, let's get all these farmers to vote, but vote for me, I'll support them, and then boom.
Yeah, are you talking about the chief minister of Delhi?
Maybe I am. Yeah, I think so.
You could be referring to the chief minister of Delhi. Yeah, that's Arvind Kejriwal. So he's new onto the political scene, and his persona as a politician is more of the common man. I'm one of you guys, you know. Yes. I want to make things better. I don't want corruption. I want to be as open and transparent as I can be. So that's his stick. While Modi's stick is very communal. It's about division. It's about utilizing fear. It's about utilizing religion to get votes. So the election process, or rather, the reason why people make election choices in our country is very complex. So you have a lot of the vote people. So keep in mind, India has a caste system. There's a socioeconomic divide. So there's a lot that is segregating people. In America, it's probably slightly simpler, where you have the red states and the blue states. But here in India, every state has a culture that's very deep-rooted and very different from the state right next door. And within those states, there are complexities that are driven by religion, by socioeconomic status. So what's happening is that the politics that of each state is different. So to get everyone to arrive at one vision for the country is very tough, because we don't have the same problems.
So it could be just totally so different from what they care about. So whatever the government's running on the platform, they might not have any, they don't care one way or the other, so they just don't vote.
Yeah. But
it does. So it does seem like a lot of the country is supporting the farmers right now, though. Is that right or no?
It is. It depends on what news source you're consuming. I mean, if you go on social media, you will see a lot of support for the farmers. But if you switch on the news, it's a completely different story. The problem with situations like these is a lot of people who agree or sympathize with the movement tend to be silent. So if you are not heard, you may as well be with the enemy or the oppressor.
Complicit.
So that you're complicit, your silence is complicit. So that's the issue. I mean, there are people across social media in the country who are supporting the farmers for the first time, I think, in their, I mean, Modi's term, he is facing a movement that he can't really seem to control.
Yeah.
I mean, all things said, it is a movement that is making impact. It is a movement that's being spoken about all over the world. Justin Trudeau commented on it. There's so many politicians from all over the world. So this is in the news. I mean, the tactics that are being used to deal with this are pretty much, you know, come across as very age-old political tricks, like what happened with the Red Fort yesterday. That was not, from what it appears, it was not somebody who was part of the original protest. It was just somebody who hijacked it to make it look like, hey, look at what the farmers are doing. So,
and if they saw our news in America and they're like, oh, let's do something like that. Let's take over.
Yeah.
What can we do? Okay. So, but how are the farmers... I was curious to how the farmers, because it seems like a lot of them have been camped out outside of Delhi, on the outskirts of Delhi, in almost like a, it almost looks like a music festival scene or something.
It does.
They eat, they self-sustaining. It's like, what's the Burning Man? It's like they make food and they have events and speeches. Yep. How do
the police didn't want them in the city, right? Is that?
Well, how do they live without money?
So,
you know what I mean?
So they have been barricaded out of the city. They have not been allowed into the city. So they have been protesting on along the borders and outside. So the community, a lot of the farmers that are protesting outside Delhi come from the state of Punjab. And they, if I'm correct in saying, they're some of the they're part of the farming community that's doing a little better than the rest of the country. Also, they are very well organized. They're very united. they're not easily swayed by empty promises. And they also have a support. They have support coming in from the Sikh community from around the world. I don't know if you guys have heard of Khalsa Aid. This is a Sikh organization that really helps out in situations like this. They've done this in the UK. They've done this in the US as well. So they've been supporting them. I think so they've been sending over food, pizzas. They've even set up massage sections.
Nice.
Which is pretty. So there has been support. I really would not be able to say much about how are they financially managing this, but I have read that these protests have, cost them money, of course, because they're not working on
the
farm.
They're not working on the farm. Yeah.
They're here. So there is a financial cost that's coming with this movement, but I'm not sure how they are managing that cost. But from what I know and what I've seen, their resolve is very strong. They know what they want. They don't care if it's biting cold right now. They don't care if they are being maligned on the news. They have a very firm resolve in terms of what they want. So hopefully they'll get there. I was reading up, and a lot of economists have also said that yes, we do need reforms in the agriculture sector. However, I think it's very important to have the buy-in of the farmers, because they are the most important stakeholders, you know. So ask them, you know, what they would like to see, what they would like to have change in their industry. So hopefully it will come to that. And I think, I hope that there will be some sort of an amicable resolution.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like, first of all, from what I've read is that they're getting donations from all over the place. As you said, it might be the Indian diaspora around the world. Maybe from within the country, but people are
from
donating
within the country as well. Yes.
And it seems like they, I lost my train of thought, but here's another question. I Kaplan, do you have something? Or I wanted to go somewhere else.
No, go on.
Okay. You mentioned briefly the caste system. I'm kind of fascinated. How does that work?
So within the Hindu religion, within Hinduism, they have groups, societal groups, based on your birth, so to say. I mean, I'm not an expert on this because I'm Catholic myself, but within these groups, so the people on the top of the groups, I think they're known as Brahmins, they enjoy the most privilege. And if I'm correct, the people at the bottom of the group, that they call Dalits, they enjoy the least privilege. There was a time where untouchability was a thing in India. It still is in some parts of the country, where you cannot, eat food that has been cooked by a Dalit, or, you know, so they're considered to be impure. So basically, if you're higher up the caste system, you have a good life. If you're at the bottom, you don't. And there are laws in place that, you know, say that, you know, that dictate that this should no longer exist and everyone should be treated equal. It says so in the constitution itself. But if you go into rural India, that apparently is not the case. So the system is still very prevalent. So everybody is grouped together on the basis of what caste they are born into. And then that dictates the rest of their lives.
Wow. And that's based off how you're born. You're born into.
Yeah. It's based on what family you're born into. Yeah. And they don't believe in mixing. If you're from an upper caste, you can't marry someone from a lower caste because they want to maintain the purity of the bloodline.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's limited. But you as a Catholic, you have nothing to do with
it. You're outside of that. Yeah.
No, I mean, like I said, I mean, I live in the economic capital of the country. It's a very different life that I have here. And I have to keep acknowledging that I have a lot of privilege. So a lot of problems that these people face will never be something that I'd have to deal with. But I think it's important to acknowledge that this does exist. It is a thing.
So when you go do show, do you know anyone who's part? I guess you probably do, right? Who's part of the system or not?
I mean, you know, not really. I mean,
okay. So
That's Kaplan's right. I mean, I know people who technically by their bloodline, by their bloodline would can be considered as upper caste, but these are people who've renounced the caste system. They don't believe in it, and they're pretty liberal. So in the cities, largely in the bigger cities in India, you wouldn't see it being so obvious and in your face, unless it comes down to a question of, hey, my daughter's getting married, so what caste is the boy from? Certain situations, it might crop up in a bigger city, but in rural India, in the heartlands, it's in your face. It's pretty out there.
And is that I would renounce it if I was in the upper caste until my daughter's getting married. I was literally about to, I was thinking about Ruby Kaplan there, and I was like, I'm in a room right here. It's like, no.
Yeah.
So what?
So you do have that. I mean, I even have fans writing in going, hey, man, I like this girl and we like each other. We want to be together, but our parents don't approve because they're from different castes. Wow. And I'm just like, man, just run away, dude. Just fucking go to America. It's much cooler there. You'll just get shot. That's it.
Yeah. Here, though, there's definitely parents who wouldn't want their kid to marry someone of the other political party. I mean, these people are all losers. But they exist.
Really? Is that true?
Maybe. Definitely. Younger parents now. Younger parents.
Older boomers, they don't care. Boomers, but like younger parents, I'm sure.
The woke millennials, yeah. I suppose.
The woke millennials, yeah. They have kids.
I guess,
the woke.
Yeah.
And I've heard
guess
people
that
say,
would be
like,
a big factor.
How could you be friends with someone who has a different political whatever?
But that's what their choice is, at least.
You're not born
into that.
That's true.
Exactly. But also, up until many years ago, our political choices were private. I mean, before the advent of social media, nobody really spoke about who they voted for.
It wasn't much of
a discussion. You were told not to. Suddenly everybody has a mobile phone and they're all pretty vocal about who they support. And suddenly people are realizing, oh my God, I thought I knew this guy and he was my friend. But I don't know. It's a very tricky situation, isn't it? I mean, I'm okay with being friends with somebody on the opposite end of the political spectrum. But I guess it all comes down to the belief system. I mean, the kind of choices that they make, the kind of things that they support. You have to make a personal choice. If somebody says, you know, I'm okay with how immigrants are treated.
Yeah.
I'm okay with putting immigrant children in cages. Then I have a problem with you as a friend, because now it's hard to sweep that under the rug. I don't know. It's so complex, which is why I tell my friends, don't fucking talk about politics. Otherwise, right. We might not survive this trip. <know. laughs>
Don't use the word cages when we're having conversations. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I remember the question was, is there any merit? You kind of said economists said there was. You touched on that. Merit to the other side. This idea that, well, the farmers are, because if 60% of the country's farmers, we read that they're producing 15% of the output, yet they're being supported with I guess, tax dollars is what it would be. A lot of tax dollars is going to them. So is there some kind of middle ground for all this, you know, where it should land?
I mean, I hope there is. The reality right now is that the manner in which the laws were passed, with no discussion whatsoever, is like, this is it, my way or the highway, a very autocratic approach. It wasn't democratic at all. So that's kind of not giving the farmers confidence. Also, when there were platforms for various politicians from the ruling party to explain how these new laws would benefit the farmers, they were unable to do it. So what's happening now is you have these laws, and if you actually read the laws, they're pretty complex. It's not easy to understand on the first go. And so my next bet would then be, okay, I want to hear from the people who are impacted by these laws. So if tomorrow somebody says something about comedy and they say, hey man, this is what's going to change in comedy, I'm going to have an opinion that's valid because I'm in the industry. But what's happening right now is, on one hand, you've got the government that's said, okay, these are the new laws. Then you've got the media saying, oh, these laws are good. And then you've got all the other fans of the government saying, yes, this is a good thing. But no one can explain why. Or if they do try to explain, it isn't making sense to the farmers. So, like I said earlier, there is merit in bringing in new reforms to the agricultural sector. However, I think it needs to be done in a more democratic manner. So in a way that ensures that the farmers are not affected in the long run. Because from right now, from where everyone stands, from where we stand at least, it looks like this is just a way for, you know, crony capitalism to get in and kind of just make a lot. There's a lot of money to be made. Let's not kid around here. If you're looking at the kind of output that's coming out of these farms, there's a lot of money.
Yeah, so we have in America, because we have all sorts of corporate farm. A lot, most people think of farmers as a small business thing, but in America, so many of them are big corporate farms. And then we also have the issue where we're capitalistic, but like they're always destroying milk or destroying things because they got to keep the prices higher. We have too much food in America.
Exactly.
So they just dump it all out.
You will not believe. Artificial. Yeah, Kaplan. It's a similar situation in India as well. Close to 200 million people in the country are sleeping on empty stomachs every night while our granaries are full.
Yeah. Well,
we actually can feed. We have, you know, supplies to feed the hungry, but it's not happening.
To keep the prices
To keep the prices up. Also, the thing with India is democracy arrived before capitalism.
Right. Okay.
As compared to other first world countries. So democracy got here first. So now capitalism is looking at going, hey man, where else can I dip my fingers? So it's a very tricky space.
So India used to be more socialistic. Is that?
I mean, when we got independence, we were largely pretty self-reliant, although we weren't doing that well. And then in the 90s, there was, you know, the economy was opened up to the rest of the world, which is when the Indian economy really took off. And then we went from being one of the poorest countries in the world to being one of the largest donors to the International Monetary Fund. And then obviously in the last few years, the economy has taken a nosedive. I mean, there's a lot you can read about that and why that's happening. But it's kind of been a crazy journey for us as a country. So now we do stand at a very important point in our history, because economically we're not doing that well. The numbers are out there for everyone to see, and COVID has not helped. And to make matters worse, we have a country full of people who are more interested in, you know, stuff that's not important. Like, I mean, the headlines in the country today are comedian arrested for joke he has not told. Then there's a show on Amazon. Yeah, I mean, in the sense that
for us.
He's in jail for a reason that's not important.
Right. Okay.
if that makes sense, because people are more concerned about what are comedians saying, what is Amazon, what is the show on Amazon Prime saying about my religion, as opposed to, hey, why is the economy so messed up? Why is the infrastructure so screwed up? What's happening with our healthcare? Why don't I have roads that are finished outside my house?
So yeah, why asking, are 200 million people not able to eat?
Going hungry, yeah. eat every night. So,
well, does, so yeah. Because what I read, Modi wants to, obviously he's liberal, economic liberal, wants to liberalize the economy, right? Or whatever, privatize the economy. Yeah,
classic liberal, yes.
Classic liberal is what I'm trying to say.
As a conservative.
Is the idea that these farms will go to his motivation? Because if 60% of these people don't want you to do something, also, as you were saying earlier, it's a big, it's always a big red flag when somebody says, hey, I have this great thing, it's going to help you. And the people say, oh, we don't want it. And they go, oh yeah, well, too bad. Yeah. It's still, we're still doing it. It's going to help you. Is the idea that this is, he's has relationships with these big companies that are going to come in, and is it that he'll get a kickback, or he just think it's good for the like the tax dollars will help the country?
It's for his friends.
Okay.
Simply put. Also, just to clarify, not the entire 60% of the farmers are not involved in the protests right now.
Okay.
So they are spread across different parts of the country, but farmers from different parts of the country have voiced their support for the protests that are going on. So I think numerically, it's not all the farmers, but a large chunk of them with a loud voice are making themselves heard.
And Modi wants to, another 2024, he wants the economy to double. But from now to 2024,
not happening.
That was my question. Is that in any realistic possibility?
I doubt it. It's not happening.
I mean, in four years.
I think one of the campaign promises was to turn India into a $1 trillion economy. We're so far off from that happening. I mean, even now, Bangladesh, our neighbors in from the east, their economy is doing much better than ours.
With
demonetization, I don't know if you know that this happened a few years ago, then the implementation of the goods and services tax, all of these things have kind of thrown our economy into a tailspin, because up until a few years ago, we were a cash economy, largely a cash economy. And then overnight, he demonetized a lot of notes that were in circulation. So a lot of people had money that was not worth anything anymore. And then they had to rush to the banks. Yeah, read up on demonetization. This happened in, I think, 2016. Yeah, about 4 years ago.
And he did it overnight as opposed to gradual?
Overnight. No warning whatsoever. He comes on TV at 8 p.m. and says, okay, from tomorrow morning or from midnight, these notes will no longer be valid. So if you had those notes, you had to then run to the bank and deposit those notes into your accounts for the notes for your money to be valid.
Within 24 hours?
Not 24 hours. They did give people, I think, about a month or so to do it. But keep in mind, we're a very large country. Yeah, we're a very large country, and a lot of the small and medium businesses, they operate on cash. They don't do digital transactions. So you suddenly took that money out of circulation. Small businesses were crippled. Then I think a year or two later, they implemented the goods and services tax, which a lot of economists say was not done in the correct manner. It was done rather haphazardly, which is also causing a lot of problems with the economy. So I'm not an expert, but I don't think we're anywhere close to being
double
in 2024. I mean, looks unlikely, but could happen. But I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that might be part of his push to just to open up the economy at all costs.
It could be, but here's the problem, Turner, is that the people are not interested in the economy.
Okay,
you've got a vote bank, you've got a population that's more interested in communal politics. The government over the years has convinced the Hindu population of the country, not all of them, but most of them, that they are in danger from the minorities, which being the Muslims. I mean, that's old school political strategy.
Yeah, we got a bit of that here something. As well.
Yeah, give the people something
Hindus
to fear.
Hindus are about 80% of the population, right?
Exactly. Hindus are 80% of the population. How are you in any danger from the remaining the rest of the minorities? How is that even physically possible? So, but they've convinced them that you are in danger. So what they do now is over the years is they have been feeding that fear. And they keep feeding that fear by, you know, these targeted attacks on the Muslim community. As a way of showing, hey, look, remember we told you that you guys are in danger. Look, we're keeping them in check. And this is not just the government. This is the government. These are fringe groups who have now become mainstream. It's the news media. It's a lot of the supporters of this government on social media. So it's a concentrated and well-coordinated effort to subvert the realistic expectations of a government. You know, so instead you keep diverting them. You keep diverting their attention and saying, this is what you need to worry about. This is what the real issue is. And nobody's going, or very few people are going, hey, no, hang on a second. What about the economy? What about the jobs you promised? What about all these other things? So
that's easier to solve, right?
Yeah. It's not like the political discourse in our country is based on the things that matter. The political discourse in our country, if you look at Indian Twitter, it's about things that don't matter at all.
Yeah.
That's what we saw.
It's ridiculous.
Like last year, he passed like a law that you make it easier to become a citizen if you live in a neighboring country as long as you're not Muslim.
Oh, yeah. The Citizen Amendment Act. That's another crazy thing.
The problem doesn't exist. Yeah.
Yeah. So he basically passed a law saying that Hindus, people who are oppressed in neighboring countries can seek asylum or move to India as long as they were Hindus. Hindus, Christians, Sikhs, but not Muslims. So that kind of, you know, created a massive uproar in the country going, why are you targeting Muslims, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then they said that they will create a registry of citizens of India as well, who, and if you cannot prove, if you don't have the papers to show that you are a citizen of this country, you will again be thrown out of the country.
Whoa.
Which is so weird because you've got so many of the people don't have clothes to wear, homes to live in, and food to eat. You think they have papers that have been handed down from generation to generation? They don't. So at every turn, it seems to be some effort or the other to kind of disenfranchise the Muslim community.
I mean, it's like, as you said, this is an old trick. Right. Whenever things aren't going well, instead of fixing the tough problems, you just blame some pick a population,
like a minority.
Blame them.
Exactly.
And then divert the attention and we can all move on. And your friend of yours that you were talking about earlier, the comedian who got arrested yesterday, a listener of ours, Bill Dodson, sent me an article, this exact article you're talking about, like 2 hours before we recorded this. And he goes, whoa, you should see this. I went, yo, we have an Indian comedian on today. We'll talk about it. And you know the guy. And he's the comedian that got arrested is Muslim, correct?
He's Muslim. His name is Munawar Farooqi. He was arrested on the 1st of January at a show in a city called Indore, along with four other people who were part of the show. One of them who was just a friend who was visiting him. He had nothing to do with the show. He was just like, it's like, you, Tono, you have a gig. I'm your friend. I just came to the green room to see, hey, man, how's it going?
Yeah.
And before you know it, there are people, there's a mob outside and all four of us get hauled into the police station.
I'm a groupie. I'm not even a comedian.
Yeah. A fan.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's been in prison for 26 days now and the charges that have been framed against him are bailable. So he should have been out on bail within the first attempt. So we have the Sessions Court, we have the High Court and the Supreme Court. So you can have three levels of appeals. So they applied for bail in the Sessions Court, that was denied. Then it moved to the High Court, and the judge at the High Court, there was a hearing a couple of days ago, and he actually said, Here's the background before I get into what happened at the High Court. Here's the background of Munawar. Okay, he's a young upcoming comedian, but who just blew through. I think and he's been doing this for about 3 or 4 years, and he's really popular today. He became big on YouTube, selling out shows across the country. He's really hot right now. And he got very popular because of some of his videos that had jokes about religion, but now not a, just a specific religion. There were jokes about Hinduism. There were jokes about him being Muslim as well. But as is the case with a lot of the right wingers in this country, they only cherry pick their outrage. So they kind of took offense to, oh, why is he making fun of Hindu gods? And that kept that also then feeds into the, hey, remember as the government told us that we are in danger? Look at the danger, jokes, yes. Very dangerous. So so people started getting pissed off because of that. Now, there is a law in India that safeguards religious sentiments. So wherein if a person shows malicious intent towards, you know, inciting riots or violence towards a specific religious community, they can be hauled into prison. Now, I was reading up on this, and these laws were framed largely for politicians. Because in case of politicians or religious figures as well, religious figures who
like hate kind speech, of
hate yeah. speech, basically yeah. for hate speech. Yeah. But now what's happening is these laws are being misused to target artists, not just comedians. Even shows that are on Amazon Prime, on Netflix, if you portray religion in a way that certain groups of people do not like, they can come after you. So this outrage back in the day was largely within the fringe, and you know, people would complain, but you wouldn't get into trouble. But now the outrage has become very mainstream. The mobs have become mainstream. The mobs enjoy the support of the police, the support of the news media, and by the looks of things, the support of the courts as well. So Munawar did not even perform. He was accosted by a minister's son from the ruling party. Who accused him of trying to sow, you know, communal disharmony, which is weird because I've never heard of anybody laughing at a joke and then going out there and killing somebody. It's just, I mean, these are people who are willingly paid to watch him, and he's good at what he does. So the police arrested him on the basis of what this guy said. And he claimed that he overheard him rehearsing his jokes in the green room, and these jokes were about Hindu gods.
Yeah, the show and hadn't even comedians,
he was in the green started, room. He got into the green room and he
overheard. Yeah. And as comedians, tell me this, when the fuck have we ever rehearsed our jokes out loud?
Never.
And the most we
I actually
never. That
I
didn't never see, happened.
Like I'm, gonna, an actor I'm not running gonna, lines, maybe.
I'm not gonna that, name him, but I do remember one guy doing that 5 years ago at our club in Shanghai, and I didn't know him well enough to make fun of him. But if I would have known him better, I was like, in my head, I was like, what are you doing? I've literally only seen it once. Yeah. He was going over the words, but we never do that. You know, I mean, your bits. You have
at the most. Yeah. At the most, at an open mic, maybe if you're just trying out for the first or second time, this guy's a seasoned comedian. He doesn't need to do that. It's all up here. You just have to remember your set list.
It's in your head.
Anyway,
it's
so just, that's on the basis of
have
that.
People in the green room, though.
He wasn't even in the green room. And there, on the basis... He wasn't in there. He claimed to overhear him. And on the basis of that complaint, he has been hauled into prison. And the police have admitted there is no video proof that he insulted any Hindu gods. Yet he is still in prison. Courts have still denied bail. And the High Court, the judge of the High Court, who had the hearing a couple of days ago, said that such people should not be spared. Keep in mind, this is a hearing. This is a bail hearing. There's no trial. Trial has not commenced. No evidence has been presented. But it looks like the judge has already passed, has already made a judgment call to say sort of this guy is guilty, which is so weird. So he reserved the bail order, which basically means that he's going to go think about it. And there's another hearing tomorrow to say if which will tell us if he gets bail or not. And ironically, tomorrow is his birthday. Tomorrow's Munawar's birthday. Oh. So I really, really hope
he
gets a bail. But it looks unlikely from what we last heard. And then there'll have to be another appeal in the Supreme Court. And maybe hopefully by then there is outrage brewing in the country right now. A lot of people are talking about this. And this is he's not committed a crime. And even if he has, the law that has been used to put him in prison is a bailable law. So he should be out on bail irrespective and let the trial commence. So what's happening now?
And are the rest of you all now worried? Like the comedy community? This could happen to anybody.
You guys should start protesting.
Because he's Muslim.
We should get out on the streets. But I think a lot of comedians are also scared of putting a target on their backs. Yeah. Because if you if you are seeing in support, they'll come after. What if they come after me next or the other? I think, I mean, to be fair, I mean, comedians don't wield that kind of power, do they? I mean, we make people laugh. We're not the kind who incite a mob or be part of anything that's violent. We just want to make people laugh.
And do a show from the Red Fort. Just go down there.
Yeah. Add to the Red Fort. See, I'll tell you what's happening right now is the process is becoming the punishment. So what is happening is the police or the government or anybody who wants to trouble you is using the system and the many loopholes within the system to just send out a message to keep everybody else in line. He will get bail. There's no doubt about it. He will get bail, but maybe after a month and a half. So what's going to happen? Because the trial itself will take years. So they're not, they don't care about this case going to trial. It's about how can we make him suffer today?
Right.
And what message will that send out to all the other artists out there who are being very vocal about things that we don't want them to talk about?
To scare the next guy. Basically.
They need to get.
Yeah. So what I'm basically saying, is you guys should come to India for a tour.
Let's
end up in jail with him. They should. What they
live
should
from an Indian jail would be great for our Patreon.
That'd be a good one.
Yeah.
What they should do is, you know how like if someone's like robbing places in the neighborhood, they put their picture up. Like, do not watch out. Don't serve this person. Comedy clubs should put the picture of that, like the son of the police chief or whatever.
The minister. Yeah.
The minister, don't put his picture up. And be like, if this guy enters, just don't even go on stage. But I guess your friend didn't go on stage.
He stepped on the stage, and as soon as he went onto the stage, there's a video of this out there. As soon as he went on stage, he was accosted on stage by this guy. And Munawar very politely had an exchange, a brief exchange with him, where he tried to explain to him that, man, he's done jokes about all sorts of topics, and there's no intent to, you know, kind of sow communal division anyway. And it seemed like he was placated, but then he went outside, and 5 minutes later, a mob comes into the venue, storms into the venue, and then the police are there, and then he's arrested. So he basically he hasn't even performed. So he's in jail for jokes he has not told.
That's crazy. At least let him tell the jokes.
At least,
let him finish the set before you arrest him.
I mean,
unless I've bombed before in my life. I bombed before in my life, but I've never been arrested before the show started. That seems like a tough one.
It
Save you.
That was an issue in China when Andy, Curtin, and I, who put us together when we were performing out there. You know, our club had guidelines of what you could talk about and what you couldn't talk about, and it was pretty simple what you couldn't talk about. Comedians that were visiting would say like, "Oh, well, there. What if I don't see any? I don't see any. You know, take a look around if there's any like." Spies or government officials in here, I won't do it. But if the government officials aren't in here, I'm going to say what I want. And what we would have to tell them is the government official doesn't have to be in the room. It could be the son or the daughter of the government official or the cousin, and they get offended and then they go tell them even casually. Yeah, they could go to dinner the next night and say, oh, I saw this comedian. I didn't like what they said. And then all of a sudden the people come find you. So it's that's too bad. That's what's actually happening. But I want to ask about your comedy, the Indian comedy scene, which Andy Curtin has visited you guys a bunch, told me about. And I remember him telling me years ago that he's like, mate, they're all on YouTube. They're all blowing up on YouTube, mate. Yeah, we've got to get on YouTube. And
great accent.
American comedian. That's my Australian.
That's a
and American
Australian
comedians, we're very late to YouTube. You know, I feel like people will put no one wanted to put their material on YouTube because they thought then people wouldn't come see you in the comedy club. I know there's people like Andrew Schultz who have been doing it the last few years and have had like a ton of success. But Andy told me years ago that you were doing this. You were putting like a new video every week that was like a current event topic or something. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, that's how I kind of got a little bit of success on the internet. So every comedian here who's had any amount of success owes that success to the internet. So what happened, what happened with America, you guys have a very strong club comedy network, club comedy system. Then you have television, you go on, you know, you had the Lettermans back in the day and, you know, but in India, we didn't have that kind of electronic infrastructure. We had gigs that were happening at pubs and clubs, but there were 50, 60 people at best. And then with the YouTube really took off over here, because then a few comedians put up some of their videos and those videos went viral. Then a bunch of us went, hey, let's try this as well. So me personally, I started putting up videos about stuff that was in the news. So topical comedy, I found quite enjoyable to write about. And then what we did was, a lot of us, we would put out stuff on the internet, but we also had a set that we performed at live gigs that wasn't online.
Okay.
And we would keep updating and refreshing that set. So in a way, what the internet did was it helped advertise who we were as comics. And then if people liked us enough, they would come watch a show. And then at that show, we would perform jokes that were not on the internet. That's how it all started. And now you have Amazon Prime and Netflix and a bunch of other OTT platforms that are here, and they are commissioning specials and other comedy formats. So it's getting bigger in a very different way as compared to an established system in America.
I mean,
up until recently, as you pointed out, Andrew now became big because of YouTube. And I am seeing other comedians. Mark Norman dropped his special on YouTube as well. So I think that is becoming a preferred route. And I think it's a good way to go, because you cut out the middleman, basically.
Yeah.
It's a very simple, low production cost. You shoot your set, you keep putting it out there. If people like it, they come see you. They find you on Instagram, then you tell them you're doing a show at this club, and they come see you there. I think to pull it off successfully, obviously, hopefully enough people should like your jokes. But then it helps if you have...
you got to be good at comedy. Yeah, basic rule of comedy. Be funny. Like your jokes.
Yeah. Be funny. Yeah. And then have a set that's not online. So, you know, when
that's like,
people
it's
do...
It's mind-blowing to me that no one here ever thought of that. It was always and the older generation of comedians, a lot of time, very shy from YouTube. Didn't want to do anything on YouTube because they thought I would... But then I'm not selling it. Their goal was to put an hour together. A lot of them would take a long time, you know, years and years and years to have 1 hour.
Absolutely.
Sell that. And they're like, well, if I give it away for free, then what am I doing? But having these two sets, that's a much smarter idea, I think.
I mean, also, it doesn't have to be for free as well. I mean, with YouTube revenue, you do get some money back. Now, I think a year and a half or so ago, I started a pay-as-you-like model for all my YouTube videos. So now if somebody watches my videos and if they go, hey man, I like this and you want to pay for it, they can actually pay for it. So there's a PayPal link for
PayPal.
Yeah, we've got PayPal for people who want to pay. And that's I started that with my special. So I actually produced my first special, Shadows, myself, and then I put it up on YouTube, and then I asked people, hey, you want, if you like it and you want to pay for it, go right ahead. And they did. And we recovered the production costs of the special in the first month and a half.
Wow.
People actually paid. Yeah.
And then you probably get more people to come see you on the road because they've seen the special.
And then they've seen the special. They liked it. Your numbers go up on social media. And then, and like I said, you have to keep feeding that beast.
Of course.
As the beast gets bigger, you have to keep doing more. So it's a constant hustle, no doubt. But it's, I think what I enjoy most about the Indian comedy scene right now is how independent it is and how there are no barriers to your own success if you want to work hard enough.
Yeah.
There's no agent coming in and sitting at the back of the room and, you know, going to call you on a Conan or something like that.
Well, here's the good news. Believe, in my career, there isn't either. So...
yeah. So but you can be your own agent now.
I know. I have a career, but yeah, just no one's ever come and like picked me out of the room, which I don't think.
I mean, I honestly love what Andrew did. I mean, Andrew was rejected by I think Netflix or one of these bigger OTTs who's
Andrew Schultz
that said,
years ago.
Andrew Schultz, you're not our time. Years ago. And he was like, fuck this, I'm just gonna go straight to the people. And that's what he did. He did what a lot of comedians in India did as well. Yeah.
Netflix is now rejecting the best comedians in America on a weekly basis.
Which is so weird.
Mark Norman, Sam Morril, I think Joe Mack.
Yeah. I was like, how is this?
Literally the best comedians in New York City are getting rejected by Netflix. I think Joe List.
But why is that happening? Why is that happening? Is it
Is that it?
They're looking for a demographic. I mean,
Is it because of the
white? They're white guys. Is it because of the
cancel culture? It's not cancel culture. It's that they're targeting their job. Their business. Their job is to find a demographic, and hit that demographic. And I think, frankly, a lot of us white guys kind of all look the same to the average person.
Also, Netflix makes money either way, so they want to be able to tout their cast, their lineup. They don't really.
Well, I think that a white guy with jokes is not enough. They don't think it's enough. I think they're wrong, because I think if you're funny and you build a lot of these, these guys all have their own audiences. So I think, frankly, you want the person who has their built-in audience more than you want someone who's
representation. New. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why you don't have a special, Turner Sparks. You should have listed yourself there.
I have an album.
I know, but on Netflix, Netflix is
Oh no, I wouldn't have had one anyway. Let's be
honest. Too modest.
But I'm curious. I'm curious, Turner. If as a comedian, I mean, I know America has so many stand-up comics who are good, what they're sold, who kill every night at clubs all across the country. If you don't get the special on Netflix or Amazon Prime, can you still have a good career financially as a comedian in America?
I have a good career financially as a comedian. Yes, of course you can.
So you're okay.
Yeah. That's what I do for a living.
It's a little tricky here. He's in the upper caste system.
They take care of themselves out there. He's playing.
Don't know. You're a Brahmin comic.
top Brahmin comic in America.
What does that mean? Brahmin. So
Brahmins are basically the upper caste.
That could be it. That's me. I'm a Brahmin comic. Yeah. You can have a career. You have to be, I ran a business for a decade in China. I had an ice cream truck business. Yeah. Then Andy and I started a comedy club. So I think it takes a combination. If you don't have all the network and the Netflix and everything behind you, then it takes a combination of you're basically running a small business. So I have 15 years experience running small business. So that's been really helpful to me. But I think if you're just a young artist who has no business mind or business experience, it's probably pretty difficult. But if you're like, hey, I have this, the jokes is that's my product, what I do. Now I have to go out and sell myself. And then you put together your tour, you put together your audience, you build your audience through podcasts, stuff like that. And you go perform to your own audience, and who cares about everything else?
You
can do it.
I like what Bill Burr said, and I think that's something I live by as well. He said, I don't need everybody to like me.
Totally.
I just need enough people to like me so that I can just do this for the rest of my life. And I mean, that's it.
Exactly.
Just like Modi. You just need 38% to tie it all together.
Yes, just 38.
If you get 38% of the population to like you as a comic, you're in shape.
My gosh. I think that's it. So, last question on the farming thing. Does it seem, have you seen any change? Are vegetables, like, this might be a stupid question, are they specifically expensive now, because it's subsidized by the government? Or is that an issue that anyone would side with the government? Because they're like, it is ridiculous. The farmers have... tomatoes cost $7 or something.
Right. So a lot of the vegetables and essential commodity prices are actually largely influenced by fuel prices. So every time fuel prices go up in the country because of the logistics, because the vegetables and all essential commodities are transported across the country by trucks. So if the fuel prices go up, vegetable prices go up. I am not aware of prices being impacted because of the protests right now. I figure the prices are pretty relatively stable. But every time there's a fluctuation in fuel prices, yes, you do see prices of essential commodities going up.
Well, if every farmer in the country was protesting, then the prices would go up because there'd be no... But I guess it's only...
There'd be nothing left.
The produce that's already in the market right now, the produce that's in storage is enough to cover, I'm guessing, the next few months. I'm not sure what the numbers are. I think the impact of these protests, the immediate impact of these protests, I would reckon are being felt by the farmers themselves and not the end consumer just yet.
Not yet.
For that to happen, I would guess the entire country, all the farmers in the country will go, hang on, we're not going to grow anything for a year. Fuck you. And then we're going to have to dip into our reserves. And then once the reserves are completely depleted, is when we are going, holy shit, where are, you know, we can't import produce, give the farmers what they want. But that just seems like a very long, drawn out.
And also scenario. The farmers would probably run out of money first.
Exactly.
The country would run out of money.
Well, we have a lot of kale here in Brooklyn. We could ship off to you guys. A lot of hipster farms here.
And what about, okay.
The prices would blow your mind though. So.
Oh yeah. If you're looking for hot sauce. They make a lot of that, and they're rooftop hipster farms.
Local. When are the hipster farmers of Brooklyn going to protest against the condition?
They don't know what's happening. Come on.
Yeah.
They're too busy fencing.
Organic farming has taken off in India as well. So you have small organic farms that are slowly picking up.
Are they protesting?
Not really.
My last thing I was going to say is I saw that a lot of the farmers are setting fire to their burning.
Oh, yeah. I like this move.
They're like it's like a form of protest against some of the anti laws that are supposed to crack down on them. I guess pollution laws.
Are they setting fire to
their fields or something? Is that something?
Okay, so here's another thing, right?
With the idea of being polluting the country. This is polluting Modi.
No. This is something that they're not trying to choke him out.
That's what I thought it was.
I didn't know who they were trying to win over by that. I thought that could backfire.
I thought if they just put smoke in the air.
This is something that happens every year around towards the end of the year, around October or November, where farmers across the northern belt of India, I'm not sure if it happens in other places, but they burn the stubble that's left out in the field so that they can, you know, once that's taken out, then they can, you know, plow the field again, stuff like that. But what that does, the burning of that stubble compounded with the wind creates a lot of pollution in Delhi. So every year around November and December, Delhi turns into the pollution levels go up. It's unbearable. And a lot of it is caused by these farms that, you know, the farmers setting fire to their fields. So this isn't like, I mean, a concentrated effort to now kind of pollute the air that Modi.
Oh, so they were trying to get them to stop doing it this year, though, and they just did it anyway.
They are. I think if I'm not mistaken, one of the laws is also about the burning of the stubble. But I'm not sure. But this is a concern environmentally. Yes, this comes up every year. Going, hey man, we can't breathe. The pollution's too much. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how that's going to
get. I can't imagine the Yenta pack of Delhi being happy that they're getting all this pollution coming in.
It's part of
the circle of life with the farmers. I get it.
Yeah, it is. But it's something that Delhi has been living with for many years. Yeah. So, I mean,
all right.
Average citizen right now, I don't think they're complaining too much about it. Delhi's been known to be very polluted for a very long time.
Well, there you go. The failing New York Times told us it was to smoke out Modi.
That's
so
why we shouldn't get our news. That's why we do this podcast. The failing New York Times gives us information and we find a comedian to tell us to set
us
straight.
We get the real story.
Or maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe the New York Times knows something I don't.
They don't. You know more. Trust me.
They don't know anything. That's it. That's the episode. Daniel Fernandez. Thank you for doing it, man. Everybody,
thank you so much for having me, guys.
Check out his special Shadows. It's on YouTube and the You Started It podcast. You can watch on YouTube. Yeah. You can download
YouTube
Kaplan
as well. Yeah,
that's it. What should we do?
It's time to get lost.
Get lost.
Have a nice life.
Have a nice life. That's how we end it.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.